welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode 162. Joining us this week, we have a lot of people here, so I'm going to run through them really quickly. You know me, I'm Melissa. Sitting next to me on my right-hand side is Pete.
Buongiorno.
We have Mr. Ryan P. Wilson from the Main Street Gazette. How are you, sir?
Good, how are you?
Good. Returning from the land far off to the west, we have Miss Courtney. I'm so glad to have you back to see your face. Hello.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
Of course, it's been too long. And to join our group this morning, we have some guests. We have Mr. Movie Guy 365 himself, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. You guys have heard his voice before. He's back. He's going to help us talk about movies. And I couldn't talk about a movie in particular without having a balanced panel. So to balance it out, we have Miss Ashley here from the Barker Lounger podcast. How are you, Miss Ashley?
Marvelous.
Wonderful. All right, so we have a big group here, lots of voices. Hopefully it's all coherent. We're going to talk a little bit of news because we got big news this week, not related to Marvel, but related to Disney nonetheless. We have announcements pertaining to Galaxy's Edge. Pete is writing something in the air. I don't know what that was.
What if I wanted to go on vacation, though?
I don't know. What if you want to go on vacation?
Well, if I wanted to go on vacation, what I would do is head on over to mei-travel.com and check out the experts over there so I can prep my trip to Galaxy's Edge.
Well, you don't have to prep it. They'll do it for you. They will help you with tickets, with hotels, with everything that you could possibly need. They'll give you all the great deals. Becky and her team are super helpful. So whether you are heading out to the West Coast or the East Coast to enjoy Galaxy's Edge, no matter which phase, no matter what month, we'll talk about all of that. Definitely head over to mei-travel.com and set your trips up.
Yay!
All right, so speaking of Galaxy's Edge, different coasts, different dates, what do we got? We got first,
news.
West Coast.
The news fit to right-click and copy.
Cool.
But you know what? Before we go into the Galaxy's Edge thing, because that's a little bit of a bigger one.
Is it?
Let's talk about Disney Plus. Because something was said during the Disney shareholders meeting this week, which is where we're getting both pieces of this news.
Yeah, that happened, what, Thursday?
It did. I believe you can find the recording online. I'm going to tell you right now, skip the first half because you are going to get so depressed.
Oh, you don't like to know how much money everybody's making?
That wasn't the problem. It was the things that were voted down hard by the Disney Corporation that if you are a happy-go-lucky fan, you sincerely do not want to hear the first half of it. Just stay in the shadows on that one. But then Iger came back to basically wave the flag of what's going to happen over the next year or so. In particular, we got into Galaxy's Edge, but we also talked about Disney Plus. I want to talk about that first.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly to what extent of what he said and what it will be, but a child, mind you, came up and asked about Disney Plus, and the information was given out after this.
He was not given that card to ask at all, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it didn't seem like every parent was like, go up there and ask him a question so I can say that you were on the show. It didn't feel like that at all. But basically what came out was that Disney Plus is going to include all of the Disney Vault. And I wonder how deep that sentence runs. I also want to know, definition-wise, what's in the vault. Because to my knowledge, there's never been a Marvel film put in the vault. There's never been a Pixar film put in the vault. So what does including the vault mean? Was Song of the South put into the vault at one point? I feel like it was put into a different vault.
Yes.
So I don't think that would be included because I've seen that come up a couple of times.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's big question.
Yeah, it's hanging out with Al Capone at this point.
Yeah. We don't talk about that.
Sorry, we got Geraldo's going to come in and do a big show on opening up that vault. That's a cut for everyone. So we'll find out more on April 11th, which is going to be Investor Day, which is actually Monday. This is March.
Yes.
That's in just about a month. So that's when we're going to find out a lot more, including, I would assume, the price, the release, and all that, because we're coming upon the fall.
It's so, it's weird how all of these announcements, though, have been, this blah, blah, blah meeting, this quarterly call, this shareholder thing, and it's, but then you have, Star Wars Celebration, you have D23 Expo, What are they going to announce at these things?
Okay, so this is a good thing. This has come up in video games a lot in the last number of years. Basically, what's the point of E3?
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of... You don't have to. See, this shareholder meeting was a web, you know, a web conference, basically, that you were able to listen to. It didn't cost you anything. It was in the middle of the day. It wasn't, like, with a lot of pizzazz. You could just listen to it. And Disney had more press on Galaxy's Edge from a free webinar than they could have spent in 2 weeks. And this all goes into the thing of, with the internet doing so much work for these corporations, i.e. people like us, they don't have to spend money on this stuff because it just gets put out there anyway.
I know. But like my thing is like usually these like big crowning events are where big announcements are made. So like what other big announcements are they holding, if any?
Number one is what they didn't say at the shareholders meeting, which people wrongly assumed they would, which was the title of episode 9 and a trailer.
Okay, so that never happened.
So that'll be Star Wars Celebration. Okay. So will the first reveal of Mandalorian full footage, mm-hmm. because that finished production about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So and as in like the season's production, not like an episode's production. So we're probably going to see something like that, and a lot of animated stuff, because the shareholders meeting, while good in a way of getting out information, there's no video. So yeah. You're only getting audio. And when they went to an exclusive clip or something like that, you were shuffled off to legitimately elevator music of the Disney variety, which as people who did a live thread on it, we enjoyed the hell out of. But it was sort of funny. It was like, all right, now we have some exclusive words here from, you know, J.J. Abrams. Boop, 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 boop. It's like, wait, what just happened?
You
can't. So, yeah, I guess like portion of that show was proprietary to the 12-year-olds who were in the audience. But yeah, so actually, Ryan?
Yep.
Are we spending a lot of money renting these movies that we review right now, and we should just hold off on that format till about September-y?
It does start to feel that way.
It's starting to feel that way right now.
Like, I get the new stuff's always going to be, you know, it's the same system you see with Netflix and things where they're going to come out, you're going to have the option to buy them, and then they're going to show up on it, you know, 3 or 4 months beyond that again. But yeah, right now it seems like all the back catalog is coming forward, and television, movies, you know, I thought they're going great. I'm getting all of the True Life Adventures. I'm getting Zorro. I'm getting Davy Crockett. Like, the things I've been saying I want from this is what it looks like I'm going to get out of this.
Are we going to get the other Disney, like, not the TV shows that far back, but like mid-90s-ish?
It would seem like it. It seems like, yeah, like the Even Stevens and all of that stuff, like Lizzie McGuire. It looks like, you know, from what it says, you know, that's an interpretation.
That's the thing. I think that's an interpretation, because were those shows ever put in the vault? I say with massive quotation marks.
Yeah, I don't know what.
No, but he talked around the vault a little bit, you know, saying it's going to be this catalog and everything that's been in the vault is coming out. And so that's kind of been like, it's a two-prong kind of a deal is what it sounded like.
Yeah, because it sounds like, okay, if it hasn't been in the vault, it might be like accessible. We could put it back up there. But if it's been in the vault, which the whole thing of the vault was to lock things away, and it's only released for an anniversary or whatever new format they're putting out on. But now, like, that won't be a thing. Like, we won't have to wait for the 30th anniversary of blah, blah, blah movie. Like, it'll just be on the streaming service.
Yeah, which is a little disappointing for someone who does not like streaming everything, because I don't think the quality is as good.
Oh, I'm sure they'll still put out collector's editions and stuff. They just haven't been doing the it's going away forever in the vault until next 10 years.
Yeah, I just want to be able to watch Summer Magic on demand. That's all.
I think the benefit's coming more from, like, if you're still going to buy the hard copies, is in those bonus features, is those behind the scenes things that streaming services just don't really have a great handle on yet.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So that is the Disney Plus news, and we'll find out more about that again in a month. So then the biggie news, which actually happened before the Disney Plus news, but whatever, has to deal with Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. So we are having now two separate openings, as was expected. Disneyland is going to open on May 31st, and Walt Disney World's Galaxy's Edge will open on August 29th. These parks are mirrors of each other. It's not an issue, and, you know, they're getting something different or this and that. And if you remember correctly, Disneyland's construction did start 6 or 7 months before Walt Disney World. So this sort of all adds up with Disney World coming in a bit quicker. So
I think both of them are quicker. I mean, I know California said like summer, but like usually that could be like, that could be Memorial Day weekend. That could be Labor Day weekend. So now we actually have Memorial Day.
Yeah, I think Disney did what Disney did. They said a date that's in the range, and they are just outside that window. And I think that's like, yeah, par for the course for them. So
the big surprise is Disney World.
The big thing about this is that these will open in phases. This was not an idea that was out there at all. Either were the dates. The dates that everyone was predicting were totally wrong. It was hysterical. But they're going to be open in phases. So when Galaxy's Edge in both parks opens on their respective date, only Smuggler's Run of the two attractions will be open. Rise of the Resistance will be held until a further date that was not given. You're going to have the single attraction, and one would assume all the restaurants and stuff, those will all be functioning. He didn't say anything specifically about that. But I would make a guess that they would be functioning. And, you know, now the clock legitimately begins. Guys, Galaxy's Edge in Disneyland opens in like 2.5 months. Like, yeah, that's it. Like, there's almost no waiting time for that, which I dig. I dig this. We are sort of going into this on a lot of media stuff, except for films. But on other types of media stuff where you know something is coming and then a company comes out and they're like, oh, by the way, see you in a week, because that's when it's coming out. We actually have seen it with some movies that go direct to Netflix and stuff like that, which is crazy. But now we're getting a very short window until opening over at Galaxy's Edge in Disneyland. And then we have till August 29th, which, I mean, you couldn't pick a more uncomfortable time of year almost to open Galaxy's Edge with what you would assume are going to be massive lines.
I mean, there was going to be massive lines anyway. They're hitting though, at like that time, you know, where it's like, okay, the Halloween stuff starts late August already. Food and Wine maybe is going to start late August also. And now we have Galaxy's Edge, and it's the end of summer, Labor Day weekend, big rush before the Northeast goes back to school. I know the South is usually already in school at that time, but like, it's a big long weekend, and so now everybody's going to be there. But just to revisit this, so Smuggler's Run is the Millennium Falcon attraction, right?
Falcon, yes. Han.
Falcon.
Han.
The
Han!
Resistance one is the one that we got that cool image of a couple weeks ago with the AT-ATs, like in that scale.
Yeah, which it's been an interesting it's been an interesting development on both these attractions, because when first put out there, I think everyone was super hot about the Millennium Falcon attraction. Mm-hmm. And as some images and descriptions of Rise of the Resistance has come up, that is kind of taken the place as the number one anticipated. But we're getting the Millennium Falcon. Like, I get, like, the Rise of Resistance. I'm sure it's going to... I'm hoping it's going to be the Pirates of the Caribbean of Shanghai in the U.S. Like,
but
this,
better,
this is
because
our
we know
version,
the AT-ATs,
right,
are, like, actual physical, where in Shanghai it's all screens.
Dat-at.
Yeah.
Dat-at. Oh, I want a shirt that says Dat-at with, like, an AT-AT showing off at, like, its hindquarters.
No.
All right.
Not allowed to do that.
Do it. Everyone buy that
copyright
shirt. Dat-at. But... yes, you know, and I'm also very happy about Millennium Falcon, the Smuggler's Run, because I know we're going to be with more than five people, so I don't have to worry about a three-year-old child, like, ruining
my to keep your
flight.
Group together?
Yeah.
No, it'll be me ruining your flight.
That's all right. But yeah, so we have that going on, and so actually, on what you were saying, Ashley, Adam, Ryan, I know Ryan, you already have a trip coming down here, so you're not going to cancel that and move this. But Ashley, Adam, Ryan, you can all talk at once. What if, were you planning on coming down for opening, and does hearing it in phases stop you from coming down to phase one? Ashley, can you...
and just
up?
Before you answer, we don't know when phase two will be in either park.
I said that before.
I don't know if you wasn't listening to you.
I did. So Ashley, what would you... what? Does this change your opinion on coming down for this park when it quote-unquote opens?
It would, but we are moving to the Florida area.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah, in 2 weeks. So that could definitely change what we do. So then, yes, I'd say I'd go in phases. But no, if I was still here in Nashville, I would definitely wait until all the phases had come out. Why go to something on your vacation that's not completed yet?
Good point.
2 weeks. It's the right time to spend in Mars as well, I have been told. 2 weeks. Adam, does this change your alleged travel plans at all?
We weren't actually coming in 2019 anyway. We have other arrangements, but that fact that it's opening and they're staggering their opening, I'm kind of okay with that in my case because I feel like I won't be missing the entire experience. And I would assume phase two is going to be in the first half of 2020, maybe. So in that case, it'll fall right in line with when we plan to visit Florida next.
I'll be honest. I think it'll be before the end of the year.
I mean, at least in Disneyland, it should be open before the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that far behind. I'm trying to remember how far phase one and phase two of Fantasy
was. 2 years.
But that thing was like, there's nothing there yet, you know?
No. And see, like, I actually found this. This was on Twitter because somebody put that up. They're like, oh, is this a whole thing, like doing the two-phase thing, whatever. And like somebody went back and they were like, yeah, well, I think it was Disneyland. They're like, one part opened in 66, and then this attraction or these attractions didn't open for 2 years later after that. Like, I think it was Haunted Mansion. Didn't open for 2 years later. And like, I was like, guys, we don't even have to go back that far. In 2012 was when, quote unquote, New Fantasyland opened up. You had Belle's Adventures. You had Adventures of Belle. You had Little Mermaid. You had Gaston's Tavern. So you had Storybook Circus. You had all of that opened up. Except for that big hole in the middle, which was the Mine Train, which didn't open up until 2014.
Yeah.
So that was 2 years, but that was also like still heavily in construction.
That's the thing. It was legitimately a hole.
It was, yeah. And the walls were up and like you could look into the pit and everything.
Yeah, that was cool. They had the little view windows. That's right. Yeah. The dwarf size windows. Yeah, but that was fun.
I mean, as far as we can see, Rise of the Resistance, like we saw those AT-ATs being built, and then we saw the building being around it. I don't think it's going to take even a year after phase one's open.
I wouldn't think so.
I think it's just maybe a little bit of other things that they're tweaking out, but I don't think that it's going to be that long. They've done it before. They just didn't happen to do it in Pandora and Toy Story Land, which were the new expansions in Walt Disney World lately. But they weren't, I don't think, as big as Star Wars, as Galaxy's Edge. So
because
I'm going to call it Star Wars Land forever. That's true. But we also know that we have heard as rumors that they are going to be opening another piece of Pandora at some point. So, like, you can say that that's a different phase, but not really because the land is complete. So
and you're all going underwater, folks. If the third attraction in Pandora is not underwater, that would be the most shocking revelation of ever, because Cameron.
Didn't they do like his movie thing and he said they're going underwater?
Yeah, the sequels are going underwater, so yeah.
Now we just have to have
Under
the Sea.
Of course they are. He only made the first movie. He's like, goddamn land films. I got to work up to going down.
He went all the way to outer space just to get back under the water.
Ryan, are you going to come down here for the, would you halt or do you want to see like what you can see when it happens?
No, I'll see what I can see when it happens. I will say that knowing that the announcement of dates was likely on Thursday, I made sure my room was booked for California for when I have a trip planned already this summer on Wednesday, because I imagine those rates are going to go up.
Good call.
And then we were actually already planning on coming towards the end of October, beginning of November. And when I told my wife that Galaxy's Edge was opening – before we got there, because she was looking forward to not having that massive people be there. Her response isn't fit for air. It was not a pleasant evening in my household. And then when I told her that it was in phases, that was even worse news to give her. But so I'm excited to be able to see what I can see. One in California and then in Florida. I'll actually have a little bit of bearing when I get there because of having spent a couple of days in California.
Yeah. And, you know, worst case scenario, like, even if you don't get onto the attraction in one, you can always do it in the other. You could also do, like, the experiences, because there's, like, you know, the whole thing with they're going to be doing experiences throughout the thing rather than
it's
just...
Is that phase one or phase two?
I think it's got to be phase one. You can't just say, come to this land for this one attraction. You got to say, come...
Oh, you absolutely can.
Well, you can.
I just want my lightsaber. If I can get my lightsaber, I'll be a happy boy.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if they're selling Porgs and that attraction is open, roughly 95% of us are going to be like, all right, let's line up. Like, that's really, like, we're right now, we're just so hungry for this thing to actually happen after so long.
I want a lolf cat.
I'm pretty sure they did that with Hogwarts Universal. Yeah, we were there early, like back in college when it was coming out. Like, yeah, we were all just waiting on the one ride and that was it. And there was butterbeer and that's all they had.
That's, yeah. I mean, yeah, when you think of it, that's Wizarding World of Harry Potter. That's Hogsmeade.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, Courtney, are you going to be there the 31st?
I've never done a land opening and I kind of want to.
You should.
I feel like I should.
You should.
And that's shortly after my birthday, too. I wanted to go for my birthday. So maybe I will just do that.
Yes. I think you should. We actually...
Yeah.
I think the end of October is a much better time for you to hit Florida.
That's a good point.
Well, yeah, she can come out to Florida with us.
Well, yeah, but she can go to Disneyland whenever she wants to now.
Yeah, no. Yeah, if I can make that happen, I'll definitely go for the opening. Also, that would be nuts.
Also, going on May 31st in California sounds insanely more attractive than going in August in Florida. That sounds gross and uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
Boo. I will be in Disneyland hopefully in October. As long as Blizzard doesn't burn the earth down by then.
BlizzCon.
Along with BlizzCon.
Never know.
That's the news, folks. Galaxy's Edge is opening.
Yeah, so we know phase one. We know those dates. We don't know phase two. So if you are...
That's the wrong Captain Pete.
They're all the same.
They are not all the same. We will definitely be somewhere near Galaxy's Edge at some point this year. Whatever phases, all the phases, we'll see it.
Well, we're going to be there opening day because we actually...
I want
with
a
couple
cat.
Of friends, we actually did get a room.
We booked a room.
We're actually arriving the day before.
Yes. I mean, arriving, as in driving.
I don't actually think, just driving 20 minutes. But we're actually, we have like the 28th to the 31st, we will be in the Disney World Resort.
So the interesting thing will be when Fast Passes go up for that, if there are
Fast Passes. And if there are paying Fast Passes, guess who's paying? It is time, folks. It is time for Walt Disney World to offer a benefit to spending a little bit more cashola for the Fast Passes. The time is now.
Which is interesting because we know that Disneyland has the Max Pass that you do pay for. However, we do know that not every attraction is on Max Pass. And similar to Universal, sometimes the newer attractions are not on the Express Pass initially. So... I wonder what they're going to be doing with that in Galaxy's Edge and Disneyland, or if they'll say, like, oh, if you bump it up to this level of Max Pass, then you'll get Galaxy's Edge included on that, or if you are an AP. But I know they've been blocking out APs, so I don't know.
I think they're going to just for Disneyland, it's a little easier. I mean, for Disney World, it's a little easier because there is no pay for. So this will be the introduction to the pay for.
Yeah.
At least this is, it's a guess, but. This seems the right place to do it. Do you remember when Pandora opened? Was there Fast Passes available?
There was. Well,
there were. That's right. There were.
There was.
Yeah, because we did it for the boat ride.
Yes.
But we had been on those attractions like 5 or 6 times already at that point because of previews.
Yeah.
I also think this is a good window that you're getting previews. I know a couple of cats in the Club 33s, and they have intros for previews of these lands. So.
It'll
at least for Disneyland.
Disney World will do previews, whether they'll do it like Club 33, DVC, or Disney Parks Blog, AP. Like, there's a lot of ways we got into Pandora like that, but I'm wondering.
I'm wondering if they're going to keep the trend of the early morning magic and see if they'll open some of that there. Because I'll pay for an hour and a half in Star Wars with limited crowds, I'll pay you another parks ticket effectively.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
but
true.
Do you think it'll be limited crowds or will it be everyone who's on Disney property that day?
Those are ticketed.
No, I think they'll limit it.
They might raise the price, which might, you know, also help.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, you're talking about the ticketed event.
Yes.
Yes, I would pay $200.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Because I'm going to pay... Because our original plan was we were going to rent... Nope. We were going to book a VIP tour.
We were
going to
rent a tour guide?
Yeah. We were going to rent a tour guide for you know, for the day for Hollywood Studios. And that would have came out to about $250 a person. So, yeah, sure. I mean, you would have only gotten about an hour and a half at the most in Galaxy's Edge because you're also – it's funny. We're going to VIP thing for Hollywood Studios, but – I would just be like, look, you can skip 80% of the time you're supposed to spend with us and just bring us to the one thing that matters, and then you can just have a long lunch.
I mean, however, I'm hoping that the Runaway Railway will be open
at
some point so we can maybe take advantage of the VIP when that, as well as phase two of Galaxy's Edge.
Hoping that's
up.
My birthday. I'm hoping December is the month of
is
that,
phase two.
Where phase two is open and Minnie and Mickey is the fall.
Yeah, they said fall, so that could be whenever.
So that could be April. Yeah. you know, so who knows? I mean,
yeah, I really thought we'd see that before we'd see Galaxy's Edge. Like,
right?
Timeline-wise,
wasn't that
I really
like
thought
a lock?
That was the timeline.
You just assumed that was how it was going to go, right?
But yeah, because initially they said, like, fall for Galaxy's Edge, and then they said fall slash winter, so we were like, oh, they're pushing it back, and now it's, like, August, so I don't know. Time is weird. But you know where time is not that weird?
Huh?
In our next movie that we're going to talk about. We're going to go back in time.
Yeah, I guess
back
we are,
in time.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to talk about Captain Marvel. So what I want to do with this one is I want to do, for everybody who hasn't seen it yet, I want to just do our, like, impressions, if we liked it, if we recommend people seeing it, how long you want to wait to see it, that kind of stuff.
I can do, like, a good Ian McKellen. Courtney, what kind of impressions can you do?
No.
Nothing useful.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't do anything.
So Courtney Kardashian, good.
All right. Oh, you can't
wow.
do that.
Pop. I'm going to put you in a corner. And then we'll
Nobody
go in.
Baby
we'll
in a corner.
He's not a baby. we'll warn you guys. We'll let you know spoilers. And then we'll do a little bit more deep dive if we want to talk about specifics. We'll obviously also talk a little bit in that spoiler section about Endgame and, you know, the stinger and everything like that. And where all this will culminate in a month and a half. So let's talk.
Jesus, a month and a half. What the hell?
I was doing that math this morning.
That's like, weird. That is really weird.
It's so close. It's so good. So let's talk spoiler-free first. We'll just get like a little bit of everything from everybody, but no spoilers first. So, Ashley, let's start with you. I haven't heard from you a lot. So, Captain Marvel, I know you've been following the MCU. I know you and Ryan are into it. What was your anticipation for the movie? What did you maybe feel going in and when you left the theater?
I had very high expectations. I had a lot of anticipation. I was more excited for this movie than for Endgame. And I thought it was solid. Definitely solid. I love Brie Larson as Captain Marvel. She does an awesome job. And her chemistry with Samuel L. Jackson is just great. They're great together. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Cool.
I enjoyed it. It was solid. But cool. I have my little things, but I don't. But otherwise, go see it. It's awesome.
Cool. Little things in spoiler section?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll hold that. Adam, how about you?
My anticipation was very, very high. I've been a big fan of Captain Marvel for, you know, since her Miss Marvel days and going back, you know, with her interactions with the X-Men, that kind of thing. I mean this in the highest possible compliment. It reminded me of a good Phase 1 movie, and it's a great first solo outing for Captain Marvel.
That's good. Courtney?
I definitely was anticipating this movie. I'm not sure that I was as excited as everybody else for this one, because I don't know any of her origin story. I didn't know any of that going in.
Yeah.
So I for me, I guess I should have maybe done a little bit more research about that, because that always gets me more excited about stuff.
Okay.
I thought it was a good, solid, like Adam said, Phase 1 movie. I think my brain is in the mindset of the end game.
Yeah.
Like, that's where my brain is. So coming out of the movie, I had some mixed feelings, because my brain just wasn't in that space anymore. Mm. But I need to see it again so that I can reset my brain with that in mind. And I think I will probably have a better experience second time around.
Cool. Ryan, how about you?
Yeah, I had some anticipation for this, just knowing, one, we're getting a decade that we hadn't seen before. And was really, really, really pumped up for this movie, and it mostly delivered everything I wanted. It was really a great film. For an introduction of a character, mm-hmm. There are pieces, yeah, here and there that definitely want to talk about. But overall, I definitely think everyone should see it.
Cool. Pete?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same boat as Ryan is on this one. I think that's a solid B. That would be like, if I had to give it a grade, it would be a B. And it has nothing to do... There's some stuff that... I don't think it's spoilery, so I think that's fine. The cinematography in the entire movie is not memorable. I understand they were going for a 90s look, and it does look like an action film shot in the 90s in a lot of places. But I don't think that was wholly necessary. I get it. You're in the 90s. You don't have to go backwards with visuals also. I think that she's not very well utilized in the first half of the film mm-hmm. because we don't learn much about the... You know, Veers, Carol Danvers, because she doesn't know much about herself.
Yeah.
But other films where characters do not know themselves has done it better, I think, in getting you to learn more about the person. On the opposite side of that, though, I think that characters that you never expected to be very effective in this movie, i.e. Marvel villains, are very effective. We had this discussion once before. I forget what movie it was, where we were like, "Yo, they fixed the villain thing."
Black Panther.
Like, you know, was it the Black Panther?
Yeah, Black Panther.
I mean, they definitely.
It's like, villain actually overshadowed a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And in this, we'll get into like what the villain is and all that. We'll talk about that later. That is my big thing. I still feel like I don't really know much about the character as presented in this universe. And I actually think that Courtney hit a nail on the head because this is Marvel's own self-created problem because they have hyped you up for April, right? Yes. For late April so hard that how do you really put all of that aside mentally and just sit in this movie theater and as a casual moviegoer and someone who's into the MCU, I feel like I had a lot of people who were like, oh, I can't wait to find out what the tie-in is. And it's like, what about the other 2 hours that you're going to spend in the theater? And I think that's a Marvel creative problem, and they shot themselves in the foot on that.
I do think that very much, but I'm going to kind of fall in the middle of everybody, I feel like, because while, like Ashley, this was my most anticipated film of 2019. When we did the 2019 preview, like I said straight up, like this one over Endgame, over most other of the Disney lineup, you know, I'm ready for Captain Marvel. I was all into, you know, her origins because I knew nothing about it. I never knew how she came about. I never knew her. Like as Miss Marvel, I know the name, but I never knew it was this character. So I'm in Courtney's boat where I had no idea about the character, but this was my most anticipated film. So it was a weird thing. I was heavily into the movie. I don't usually pay attention to cinematography. I like the visuals in that. I like the colors. I thought they did really nice with certain colors popping. I liked the visual effects, especially on her. I thought that they were great. I liked the music. I felt like this soundtrack hit me better than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I mean, Volume 1 will just always be iconic, but I think that it was far enough in the past that it was good. But like Volume 2 was like portions of music that I missed. But then you bring me here to the 90s and I'm like bopping my
head. That's just your nostalgia though?
Yes.
Because, like, it's almost unfair when hearing some of these songs,
yes.
Like, you know, Garbage. I'm like, oh, okay, well, now I have to love whatever's going on in this scene.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
It's almost unfair.
Yeah, you throw Gwen Stefani, like, in there, and I'm like, okay, done.
Yeah.
So and just giving the Smashing Pumpkins poster on the wall, I was like, yes.
Her Nine Inch Nails t-shirt,
yeah.
You know. So it's just it's a little, like, you got
it's
me.
It's a little, yeah. It is, yeah, it is, but... It was also like the most front-facing 90s stuff of all time.
Yeah, I mean,
like, it kind of
like...
came off as if like you took a really large poll and they were like, hey, what's the most popular things you could think of when I say the 90s? And, you know, mm-hmm. And so I don't know.
Yeah,
there would have been cool just to have like a couple little more like... Because in particular, one of my favorite references in the whole movie has nothing to do with the 90s, but it was introduced through a 90s vehicle, which we all know that she's in Blockbuster. And she picks up something specifically that I was like, you know, that is such a good, that is such a great thing for her to notice and for her to pick up. And that works. Oh, by the way, I never actually said what I thought about the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I actually think that this is the best Superman film that anyone's made since 1978. I say that with a big... I don't know, do I consider Donner's half-completed Superman 2? I don't really know. It's another conversation. But actually,
The other conversation to have there is that if it's Superman, or is it really more of a Green Lantern, Hal Jordan?
It is. It's a mix. That's the thing. It's a mix. Because the acquisition of powers, you can say, is very, very Green Lantern. The idea of this setup of this group, corp, is very Green Lantern. But the alien... the person who is torn between two worlds, not really knowing where they fit in, and just discovering how powerful they can be, is so Superman.
Yeah.
And you know, to amend the cinematography thing, in the last 25 minutes, that movie becomes very beautiful to look at. But when you look at like very, very basic, very, very high example, and I don't expect movies to match this. When you look at the Smallville footage from Richard Donner's 1978, which was shot by Jeffrey Unsworth, there is nothing like that since, and that's not good.
Okay.
You know, and this was the movie that I thought they were going to continue on that path of opening up the visual spectrum in the Marvel Universe, and I feel like it just sort of kept course.
Yeah.
Not a step backwards, but it kept course, which I... was hoping it wouldn't.
Adam?
Yeah, I felt like it definitely didn't have its own style, and I kind of missed that about the movie. It seemed kind of like going, once again, to phase one, very paint-by-numbers as far as film style goes. There wasn't anything really particularly unique about how it was shot. It was just very standard fare.
Yeah, and I will definitely say in the very beginning, the fight scenes were very disorienting. I think it was mostly the handheld, you know, oh, she punches here and let's follow her fist down and follow back up. Like that kind of fighting action shots, like it's just like, just pull back, just let me see everything.
It reminded me of Batman Begins, which then it changed in future movies. But Batman Begins, the first one, they were like, yeah, we created this whole new fighting style legitimately for this movie. But then you couldn't see it because the camera was so close up and it was such quick cuts. But I do think that I actually don't mind it as much in this one. And I think they also got better as the movie went along.
Yeah, they got better.
Like they did. They were like, we should back this up, which, you know.
And also, like, we were in the third row in the Dolby thing. So I didn't know if that was just, like, me trying to adjust to, like, this huge screen, like, right on top of me.
It may have
been. So, like, that, I'm also, like.
I am more used to that. That's true, yes.
Because, yeah, then later on in the movie, they probably learned and did better. And then also, like, I got acclimated to the size of the screen being right in front of me. But yeah, other than that, like...
I don't know if they learned and do better because they don't shoot these movies like in chronological order, but they may have just been more is going to be happening. It's not going to just be hand-to-hand.
Yeah.
And to show that scope, we need to do a wider shot.
Mm-hmm.
But these people work really hard on that choreography. Just let me see it, guys, please.
Yeah.
It's okay. I get it, you know? But let me see all the hard work that they're doing.
Exactly. Okay, so consensus is pretty much definitely go see the movie.
Absolutely.
Enjoy it. Maybe just take a break from the whole, you know, Infinity War Endgame big, you know, whole thing that's going on and just enjoy this story about the Superwoman and, like, what she's learning and doing.
Which I had no problem putting the Endgame stuff aside. I'm talking about the larger audience, you know?
Yeah, me too. And, you know, it's different for everybody. Everybody has a different anticipation. Some people, you know, go in different expectations. So if you can just put it in the back burner, put Endgame on the back burner, we'll get there in a little bit. But definitely enjoy Captain Marvel. I think they should have done a little bit more promo with it coming out on International Women's Day, but whatever, that's me. All right, are we good to talk about spoilers now?
I can't talk about the movie really much more than what we just did without talking about spoilers.
So let's go into spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, pause here, come back after you see it, enjoy it. We're going to talk spoilers. If you don't mind spoilers, keep listening. We're going to go into it.
You want to say spoilers
again? Spoilers. If you've skipped along, we're hitting spoilers now. Pause. Okay.
Wait, are these spoilers?
Maybe.
What's a spoiler?
Okay, spoiler time. All right, so Ashley, you said you had some stuff to talk about in the spoiler section, so let's start there.
All right, so just to start off with, the first scene I really liked where she's coming out of the dream and then you see her hand with the power. And then the second scene with Jude Law is for me is like personally all cliche dialogue coming out of his mouth. And I hated it. I hated that second scene. I don't even think I really liked like the third scene. There's a bunch of jargon trying to like thrown at us really quickly about the Skrulls and the Kree. And I was like, okay, wait, what? Also, I had somebody like talking next to me. And I was like, can you please not talk at this moment? That's just bad movie experience aside. But I just felt like it was like thrown at us quick. And we're put into it, which I was okay with because it keeps the pace going. Mm. But I honestly was not invested in the movie until she hit Earth. Mm. So I felt like there's something needed. I don't know, some editing or some resituating of dialogue need to happen there.
Yeah, it's interesting because like they keep you like at this distance of like, okay, you either know what's going on or you don't know. And that could be because Carol also kind of doesn't know like what's going on. She's still disoriented. So like, I don't know if that was their choice per se, but
that's the thing that has happened in countless films.
Yeah.
But I feel in other versions of this movie, let's just say Starman, you know what? Starman.
I've never seen Starman.
You should see Starman. You really care a lot about Jeff Bridges, and you don't know anything about him. He doesn't know a lot about himself. Also, sometimes, like, they've done this thing before. This has been a thing in movies where the main character has a sense of I don't know who I am really, mm-hmm. like legitimately. And I just don't think that they do it very well in the first in Act One. I think it's kind of messy, and they are trying to put in a lot of comic book backstory. Because outside of the television shows, we haven't really dipped our foot into the what are these people.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, whatever. You have to introduce them in some way, and you don't have to take six films to introduce, a race of Kree. But there was a lot thrown in the beginning, and then they throw in Mm-hmm. We get to the memory scene, the uncovering memory scene where she's captured. Rather quickly, about 20 minutes into the film or so, that is a gigantic info dump for you to have to remember and then reference later, because me and you were talking about this afterwards. There's some visuals that she sees in her memory that are altered by the Kree, and that's actually not really properly told later on in the film.
Yeah, you just have to assume.
And while great, you don't have to spoon feed me everything, this is a populist movie, and maybe you should bring up that one particularly, because I think it's very important, because you see the character, which I think is the best character in the movie. Ben Mendelsohn's Talos is the highlight of the movie, because Ben Mendelsohn is getting to do more than he usually gets to do, which is Krennic. You might remember him as Krennic from Rogue One. You could remember him as the, what's his name, in... Sorrento in Ready Player One. Thank you very much. He was Daggert in The Dark Knight Rises. He plays evil businessman, like, very, very well. And in this one, he has a charisma and a humor to him that he hasn't been able to do in a big film, maybe ever. And I think that he's absolutely fantastic. And I know more about Talos. He has more moments of emotional range than they let Carol have.
Yeah. The only thing I did like about all those flashback memories is they kept using like some of the same ones. So like you didn't have to piece like five, all over again. Like it was always the constant of this crash. Oh, the go-kart, it was like it did repeat. It was a little like disorienting because you're like, wait, what, why? But I felt like for a movie that was messing with time, and I don't know, maybe it's just because I just finished season 3 of True Detective, so like the time jumps are not as weird for me. Like it was done fine enough. I won't say it was perfect, but it was done fine enough for me to follow along with them.
I followed it along. I would have liked a little tighter. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all. I just wanted to know more about her because I think Brie Larson is phenomenal in the role. I don't think she's given much to do in the role that she is phenomenal in.
Yeah.
I wrote down in my notes, because I like writing notes. I said, quote, bar, she seems like she is a kettle ready to boil over, and I'm waiting for her to pop.
Yeah, which doesn't happen until like
the very end. It doesn't happen until like the last 15 minutes, but I'm not even talking about her powers. I'm talking about her emotion.
Yeah.
And I loved her. I liked her performance. I actually really liked her performance a lot. But they need to give her more to do because she was the centerpiece of a lot of emotional stuff happening to other people.
Yeah.
But, and mm-hmm. she seemed to be like the steady, the constant, the hero, which is good. But we cannot do that again for another movie.
But on the flip side, she is told from the very beginning with that very terrible dialogue, Ashley, like, don't let your emotions get in the way. Like, Jude Law's character is just constantly on her, like, bottle your emotions. Don't show emotion. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know, the typical stuff. So, like, I almost feel like until she pulls away from his quote-unquote teachings, like, she is trying to contain her emotions because that's what she's been told to do. So it is, like, this very odd, like, oh, well, she's not doing much, but, like, that's kind of what her character's been told to do in, like, a way. So I don't know.
I'm saying it's fine for the introduction. I just want to see it grow.
Oh, Jen,
and there's three acts to this movie, and it could have happened a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to the flashbacks, I think one of my major issues with it is that there's no, like, we know that obviously Captain Marvel doesn't know her past, so there's, like, she's kind of foggy on connections to people. But with Lawson, Wendy Lawson, we get only one scene of her as a human.
Yeah.
And then the other scenes that Captain Marvel has is only with, like, the phony Supreme Intelligence.
Yeah.
So that really bothered me. I was like, we need to understand why she has this respect for this woman. We're told it, but, like, show, don't tell. Yeah. So give us just one more scene of why she holds her in such high regard and that she's going to go save the Skrulls because of it.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the movie, she's saving the Skrulls, but she barely remembers Wendy Lawson. So, yeah, I just felt like maybe that would have been the scene that we really needed to get her heart.
Yeah.
She needed more heart.
Yeah, more definitely of Lawson. And I would have even wanted more of her and Maria together. Like, you know, before the movie, like, we were always like, oh, yeah, like the tagline, you know, further, faster, whatever. I don't even remember.
Higher, further, faster.
Thank you. But then, like, they said it literally once. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I was expecting it to be, like, repeated by them in many scenes together. And they wasn't.
I would have wanted that.
I would have wanted her and Maria in there more. Because, like...
See, I'm more on the Larson train, I think.
No.
Not Brie Larson. Sorry, Lawson. God, no, I gotta be careful about saying that.
Yeah, considering her importance, or quote-unquote his importance in the comic books... It was not a lot there.
You're referring to Mar-Vell.
Yeah, Mar-Vell.
Okay. Yeah, that was. I had the same response as Ashley did to this, because if you would have asked me, like, what's the scene that I think just misses in this film, which I don't think many do, the death of Mar-Vell is the most distant, uncaring death maybe in the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's one of the most important characters. And it's very important, as you were saying, Melissa, to Carol.
Yeah.
Like, this is an incredibly important person, and we never see them interact except for one very brief scene. And, you know, you have Annette Bening. She's completely underutilized here.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So yeah. If that would have mattered, if that death would have mattered as much to the character, as much to me as it's supposed to the character, this film goes from a B to to an A, a B minus to an A very quickly. But they don't do the work on Annette Bening's character of Lawson / Mar-Vell at all.
Yeah.
No, I think instead we get a lot of Nick Fury development and getting Nick to where we understand where Nick is. And he monopolizes a lot of the character development happens in this movie. And I love Nick Fury, but that's not necessarily, you know, the A game I came to see in this movie.
Yeah, I liked how they included him a lot, which was fine. I liked how they didn't have Danvers rely on him as much as, like, you know, other movies have had, like, the main character rely on the other character. But yeah, I feel like he was maybe... He utilized more of the development that she could have used, you know. Courtney, you've been very silent over there.
I mean, I feel the same way you guys feel about it. It was, like, cute to see all the comedic stuff with Fury and figure out how he got the scratches on his face and whatever, like, all of that, you know, all that was cute, but it was not useful to me in any way. I really felt like at the end of this movie, I was like, I don't know really what I learned that was useful in this movie. Mm. Like, very honestly, I felt like I didn't learn much that was useful. But again, I was in that mindset of like, I totally fell into the whole Endgame trap. So coming into this movie, I don't think I had the right mentality, but I don't feel like I learned anything. I don't feel like I learned much about Captain Marvel at all. And I definitely had the same like cringy reactions to a lot of the dialogue in this movie. There was when she was outside of the house, what did she say? She said like the most cliche like line ever. Captain Marvel said, I can't even remember what the line is. It was the most cliche thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And I was like, why, like, just why are we doing that? Just tell me more about this person, like develop these connections some. And when she gets to the point where she like, you know, realizes that that was her life before. And she has this friend who was basically like her sister. I mean, like took her in and like, that was her family. I didn't feel that connection.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're just like best friends again. And I was like, I don't feel this. I don't feel that there was any like, or not enough development of that relationship and the importance to her that would make her all of a sudden from somebody that's very unemotional become this very emotional person again and just be like, oh, this is my best friend. This is my family. You know what I'm saying?
Good parallel to that. I think that's a phenomenal, phenomenal example, Courtney. Think of the relationship between Cap and Bucky.
Well, right. And
everything about that you feel. Now that granted they used it in one film and then built it on a second. I get that. But as Ryan was saying, there's a lot of time, and I actually think this clearly seemed like the most fun that Nick Fury had on set, you know, and it must have been great for him. And seeing Nick pre, you know, Fury is a lot of fun. But it's a Captain Marvel movie. And I didn't learn anything about Lawson, Mar-Vell. I barely knew about one of the most important characters ever. And I just don't think we get enough of, like everyone's saying, the friendship between Veers and stuff. So the film does what it has to do. Like, it introduces its elements. Brie Larson, I think it's the performances that actually bring the movie up. I think the filmmaking isn't good. This is what I'm trying to say, but I'm trying to say it nicely. I legitimately think that the directing in this is very, very average. I think the constant 90s references at a certain point, it was like, I get it, we're in the 90s.
It was a Spider-Man syndrome all over again.
Yeah, you don't have to write the film like we're in the 90s. We don't need all the cliche stuff. We have moved beyond that. Now, this is the thing though that unfortunately, I was talking about this with someone on Twitter. A lot of these movies get away with this and we're okay with it. But when we get a movie that features a woman or a minority, we think that it should do more in its first showing up than other films need to do, which stars a man in its first, because we're like, yo, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
You'd better do your work. But we don't hold other films to that same thing, because if we did, we would all have been shitting on Homecoming.
Yeah.
I hate Homecoming.
I love you, Ashley.
Can I just say that I don't like it at all? I watched it the second time and it.
It's a basic, safe movie that does nothing, that does as little as possible than just reassuring us of like, look, we know. Like, that's all that movie is a big person going like, we know.
Yeah.
You know, let's bring this back down. That's why I look forward to the second one.
But see, like, okay, so Courtney, I agree with you with like the whole like, all of a sudden, like, you know, Danvers is like, it's almost like a finger snap, and she's like, oh, yeah, you're my best friend. However,
finger snap.
I also felt like that was how that type of relationship would have gone. It would have been like, this is your best friend. You haven't seen them and talked to them in a long time. And then, like, after, like, you know, just getting back into it, you're back into it. You don't have to be like, you know, oh, what have you been doing for the past, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just like after, like, a little bit, like they have that talking at the kitchen table and then they go and she remembers everything. Like, then it's just like, yeah, like this is my sister. Like, and like, yeah, we're that close in friendship that like a break in our our time talking to each other doesn't stilt the friendship at all. So, like, I can get where you're coming from, because it was very, like, you know, all of a sudden turn around and they're best friends. But, like, for me, I'm like, well, yeah, if they were that good of friends, you know, where your daughter is calling you, you know, her, your aunt and everything like that. Auntie. Like, yeah, like, for that to be such a quick reversion back to their friendship, like, to me, it was kind of like, yeah, that's how that friendship should go.
Okay, so well, yeah. I'm sorry, Courtney, go ahead.
I have friends like that who I won't see for, you know, years and years and years, and we get together and it's like nothing ever changed. But I remember the years between.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And you didn't think they were dead.
I didn't think they were dead. I remember the years. I remember the years between. I don't have this massive, like, gap in my, and, like, I'm not like a, I wasn't abducted by, you know, other
Are
people.
Are you sure?
No, I'm definitely not sure.
Would you like to be abducted by Jude Law?
Yes.
Answer the question.
I don't know if I want to be abducted by Jude Law with those contacts in, because that was a little much for me. But.
What about Dumbledam? If you got Dumbledam, would that be fine?
Yes, please. I'll take it. Yeah, I just think the fact that there was all those other factors, because, yeah, for sure, I have friends like that that I'll see, and, you know, it's like nothing ever changed, and we've never spent any time apart. But all that other crap, especially with the, like, the wall that she is working on building, you know, not being emotional, it just wasn't effective to me, I guess.
And yeah, no, just to I give understand.
You a recent example, I haven't seen our friend Rob. I haven't seen Rob for about a decade, mm-hmm. All right? I know that Rob is alive. I've talked to him in text and this and that, but I haven't physically seen that man.
Which is surprising.
For about a decade. Rob. We met up 2 weeks ago in the park, and we saw each other and, like, legitimately embraced for, like, 30 seconds and almost started, like, crying. Because we were like, yo, where have you been, man? I missed you. And that doesn't happen here. No, like, the memory comes back and she's like, yes, I remember now. So again, it's not the performances. It is it's the filmmaking, because that's where a director should be like, you know what? You guys should really be like, oh my, because I feel like we get it a little bit on the Maria side.
Yeah.
But they mm-hmm. don't let Brie Larson act. They hold her back.
Yeah, they
I think they hold her back a lot. And I'm really worried that they're going to let the same directorial duo get the second film, and it's going to look like every movie that we've seen for the last 10 years plus. And you have so much in front of you. Get some people with a real unique perspective. There's stuff in the script that I think is phenomenal. Phenomenal. The way that they flip, like, Adam, if you... Yo, if I put this movie in front of you, would you have ever guessed that the Skrulls and the Kree would have went in the direction that you would have plot-wise?
No, the story is there.
Yeah.
The structure, all the ingredients are there. It's just the cook kind of didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
They baked it at 375 when you should have been at 400.
It is an A+ character, story, everything. I just think it's directed very average. And if it wasn't for incredible talents like Brie Larson, like Sam Jackson, Ben Mendelsohn owning the screen, if it wasn't for those folks, this would be a C. But they elevate everything. Brie Larson makes very, very flat dialogue with just her. How was it? It was Vanessa who said,
it wasn't. She was confident, not cocky.
Yes, and that was the difference between, like, Iron Man and her. And I loved it. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. Like, she described it perfectly. And everything is there, but I don't think from a filmmaking, visual, and working and edit standpoint, I think this movie misses. And if it wasn't for the performances, I would not be very hot on this movie, because I would have said, well, it's great, but I saw it so many times. Mm-hmm. You know?
Can we talk about I think was the problem for me too, is the fight scene with Just a Girl comes on and you are like, all right, you just put Just a Girl on. I'm so into it. Let's go. Nothing happens.
Yeah.
They faded out in the middle. The audio on that song faded out and then came back in, which is puzzling.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that, I was like, oh, okay, that song, that's it. They're only going to use it. And then it faded back in and I was like, well, that's a choice.
Yeah, because there was no dialogue they were fading for, right?
No, there was a piece of dialogue, but as someone who has watched some movies, if you got some rocking music going on, you don't have to fade out of it.
You don't need
to. No, they faded it out when it wasn't her fighting. Like when it was somebody else, like when you were following Fury or somebody else, they muted it and then they bring it back out when it was her. And I'm like, that's a really bad choice.
And I don't like when they do that in movies, like fight scene, cut to something else, fight scene, cut to something else. Like, just let me have the epic fight scene.
You mean every ending of Star Wars? Except for the last one? Yeah, exactly. It drives me absolutely, it legitimately drives me nuts that they do that.
What's up, Court?
Well, I mean, obviously by using that song, they were pandering to the whole, like, the women thing and like women of our general ages. That song is like, that's our jam. That song comes on and we're all like, so they're pandering to us. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to do that and then not follow through, like, what's the point at all?
Exactly.
Just don't play that song. Yeah. That song was specifically for us in that moment. And then they just, it was a failure.
Yeah.
They needed hand to hand combat or something. Like, she was just, like, let her punch with a power fist, then. Everything was all beams coming at her, which is cool. But, like, let her fight. You trained her how to fight. Brie Larson clearly knows how to hold a fist up correctly, so let her fight.
But what I did like, I liked that they Wonder Womaned her with the medal, and then it was just like, nope, like, not even gonna, like,
my brain went there, too. Yeah. My brain went there, too. I was like, did you just do the metal trap that they did in Wonder Woman?
Yes, they did.
And she immediately busted through it. Now, I don't know. I mean, if we both thought that. So I'm hoping that that was a conscious decision. But Wonder Woman's also much better developed in the Wonder Woman film. So maybe you shouldn't have worried about the metal trapping thing, and you should have worried about the unbelievable ass kicking of her going up into the trench scene and been like, that's, we need that look.
No, I would say I really did enjoy, I don't know if it was intentional or not, that Raiders of the Lost Ark moment at the end, you know, when he's like, all right, come on, no powers, let's go. And she's just like,
yeah, you know. Yeah, that was great. That's the thing, like, they're everything on the written page. I think this is so good. I just wanted it to be directed better. I just thought that there's a step missing in that.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Ben Mendelsohn more?
Wait, hold on. Ryan, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, I feel like a lot of this movie is set up. Mm-hmm. And this is good. And there's like three tangents on this. But there's, you know, we've set up her friend, Maria, to really be our Peggy Carter, because we're jumping 25 years.
Yep.
True.
Her daughter, Monica, is really going to be the one to follow in the future. So they split the time she should have had with Maria, with Monica, to build that relationship.
Yeah.
You have, you know, if you know comics, the way they did the Skrulls is not what you would have expected the Skrulls to do.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you have an audience perception now of what the Skrulls are. So when they play that bait and switch card later, that's going to be fun. But you also are going to have a Captain Marvel that comes back after 25 years. I'm assuming she has matured and she has developed some of her, you know, her personality different. So you're going to have a very different character presumably showing up in Endgame, which may throw some people in the audience because it's not going to be the same person you saw in this movie. So it felt like they had like all these pieces boiling around in the pot and they couldn't figure out like where A to B to C met.
Yeah. And I want to talk about at the end how that Endgame thing will work, because I do think that that's a really good point. And I do think we get a glimpse of her character in that moment. And I think that you're right. Like, it is going to be like a very different person.
Yeah.
All right. Ben Mendelsohn. You want to talk about
him? Yes. I want to talk about Ben Mendelsohn because I want to talk about how this movie is the best piece of this movie is not only like the hero pop at the end where she like is, you know, pop, but all right, so Marvel is fun. Marvel is this. Just really quick, the Stan Lee tribute open was phenomenal.
Yes.
Great job. If you don't know what the movie Mallrats is, congratulations. Go watch Mallrats because it's awesome and it's hysterical. And it might be of its time incredibly, but it's of a good time. Also, how clever, though. Now realizing that the Mallrats Stan Lee thing is in this, a couple of weeks ago, the Captain Marvel's Twitter and Marvel's official Twitter were releasing magic eye pictures of Captain Marvel. And everyone was like, yeah, the 90s. No, it's because that was legitimately a lead up into the Mallrats reveal. And I think that was so cool. You know, that is pure fan play. And I was on board for it. So
I couldn't see him on my phone, though. I was like,
yeah, you got to use an actual bigger screen. I think it's a little tough on a phone. So Ben Mendelsohn is Talos. I think that he is the highlight of the film. But I also think that the use of which the Skrulls and the Kree are used is the best part of the film. If you remember in the beginning of the film, the Kree are approaching Earth. And right now in our minds, the Kree are the heroes, right? The Kree are the good people. Right. And Minerva, who I really like, Gemma Chan, I thought she was actually really good in having very little to do.
Yeah.
She says, "What a shithole," while approaching, that's for our British people, while approaching Earth. And initially I was like, huh, that's an odd line to have one of the good guys say, because the obvious lines that you draw from that idiotic comment are, you know, recent comments. Later in the movie, it has turned out that, oh, by the way, the Kree are actually the aggressors here, and the Skrulls are legitimately refugees who have been separated from their family. They're on the run, and the Kree are the real problem. And they were the ones who were referring to someone else's foreign home as a shithole. This is what the best part of comics does and has been doing, and that's what Stan Lee's legacy truly is. I just wanted to say that because, yes, the cameos and remembering Excelsior and everything is great and it's awesome, but he also put into comics a lot of stuff that at the time most people wouldn't have really made very popular. Star Trek was doing it too at around the same time. But that, I think, is where this movie is really, really smart in bringing its message without slapping you across the face with it, even though you can say it does. But that's fine because it's a prevalent feature. It's a prevalent idea and you need to think about it. But that whole play of the Krull and the Skree was such a great spin around.
And I like how you saw it because of how Talos plays it, like in the early beginning when they're, you know, looking through her memories, and he is almost compassionate in the way of like, you know, no, I just want to find this one thing, like trying to calm her down, and she's like obviously flipping out, but he like almost has it where he's trying to show her like, wait, calm down, like I just want to get this from you, like,
yeah, he says things like, it's a mess in here, like it's not like it's a mess in here, you're like twirling his mustache, like when you think of it and thing, he's like, Jesus, what did they do to this woman?
Exactly.
Like, what are they doing?
Yeah. Yeah, the way that he plays it also, like now on a second viewing, going back and watching it, I think that even will play even stronger to be like, no, he's like, he's just trying to find this one piece of information. You know, it's like, you know, you're just like so desperate that you just want to do this, but like you can't convey to this person who is obviously like freaking out about what's going on that like, no, just hold on. Like, also, I can get it.
If you're trained to think someone's my enemy, they're not going to be like, I'm not. And like, okay, well, I guess you're not. Like, it's going to take some convincing.
It's,
you know,
definitely a combination of a lot of things, like her physical situation, her mental, like training of these are the bad people. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. But yeah, he plays it and it's so subtle that you might not even catch it. But like, he's just so good.
And that's the thing. He has a massive arc in the film. You know, we go from how we perceive him in the beginning to that turn in the middle to seeing him with his family. Like, he has so much to do, and I just wish that they let her do more. I will say, you know, just as a final positive note, because I know we're kind of running long, the sequence in which she puts together that her failures are what makes her her is the most effective character piece in the entire film. And they pulled it off with only using some silent flashbacks.
And we have to give a shout out to the young actress, the one that plays teenage Carol Danvers, McKenna Grace.
Grace. McKenna. How do I know her from?
From The Haunting
of Hill House.
She was young Theo.
That's right. She's young Theo.
She's also Tanya.
I thought she was young insanely good.
Yes.
She's very talented.
Yeah. Yes. She's like more. She shouldn't be as talented as she is. It's kind of terrifying.
It's going to be scary in like 20 years.
Yeah.
But like, or less than. But yeah, like. And the fact that like that she has like little roles, but like it is the most impactful, like visual, and like she can do such a great job with no dialogue and just the looks. And like, I think that so helped those scenes because you give this high quality, you know, actress such an important task and she nails it. It was so good. Anybody else?
I want to say real fast too, we have, you know, we talk about the Marvel villain issue of it's the flavor of the week. It's the one that dies. You know, we didn't lose a villain here. We did keep Ron Yogg around. Mm-hmm. So he causes a ton of problems for Marvel in the comics. So it's good to keep that in a back pocket that he could pop up again.
Yes. And I liked I like Jude Law because he was like, initially he comes off as like this weird, like, you know, obviously no emotions, flat, blah, blah, blah. But then like you get the, oh, but he's like the bad guy. So like, it's like such an interesting way to be like, you know.
It's good that Ronan is still useless though.
Yeah.
Because like.
Did no one. Sorry, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Did anyone else, though, from the trailers figure that Jude Law was going to be bad? Like, I had that vibe from the start that I'm like, you know what? Maybe I didn't think that the Scree
was going to be a bad.
I was like, he's going to be the, yeah, I was like, he's going to be the villain.
I thought he was going that's to be a Skrull in disguise. Yeah, I didn't think that they were going to make the Skrulls the good guys.
I didn't watch the trailer, so that.
But seriously, Ronan shows up, and he's in there, and then at the end, they're like, what should we do? And he's like, we'll come back later. You know, and it's like, well, no, you're not, because you die soon. Like, I legitimately see you blow up. So your big plan to come back and get the woman, as you called her, you know, as the weapon, you suck, Ronan.
Yes.
You suck. But I love you, Lee Pace.
I would have liked to have seen that also as a reason Carol left Earth, was to kind of be of a beacon to, like, keep Earth safe.
Mm, instead, like, fight me over here instead of over there.
Right. I mean, I know she did it because she wanted to get the Skrull refugees away, but I would have liked to see maybe a line or something saying, oh, if I'm here, I'm in danger because the Kree are, you know, trying to get me, kind of thing. I don't know. I think that would have maybe worked a little better.
Yeah. Although,
maybe we get that in a sequel somewhere because, like, yeah, we have a 25-year gap. Why did she never come home?
Yeah.
Like, all right, well.
She looks like she's been through some shit in the mid-credit. Like, her hair's not done. Her stylist is gone.
Yeah, she's like in sweats.
Yeah.
She's just like in sweats. Yeah. She was like, I have been watching. I've been binging Friends.
No, she wasn't in sweats. She was in her Captain Marvel, but it was like just muted colors.
Okay.
It was so muted.
Yeah, it was much more like battle heavy armor type stuff.
No, that's the thing. I think that we're going to find that she was quite busy elsewhere. And I also think that it's because she said emergencies only and Fury. In the times that we've seen him in the movie, he was like, I've got the Avengers and we're gonna be able to handle this. And that's what it is. So also, guys, I'm sorry, but it's comics. That's what the thing is. There's a reason why whenever Superman has a problem, Wonder Woman doesn't show up on the next page, or when the Joker is about to blow up Gotham, Superman just doesn't punch him in the damn maw.
Yeah,
it's because it's comics, and if you're going to seriously sit in the theater and be like, well, why wouldn't they just come down earlier and like stop the invasion in Avengers? Don't watch anything with comic books. Don't read comic books because your head's going
to
explode.
But how great was it when Fury changed the name of the initiative to where we like?
I loved it. I was like,
stop it. It's a passing of the torch moment. It's moving from the first Avenger. Now she's the event. Like, it's that passing of the torch.
Yes.
I felt like it was the, who are you with? No one. I'm alone. Han. Solo.
No, it wasn't that
That's
bad.
That's exactly what I thought of.
No, it was
no,
not.
No, it wasn't that bad.
Was it not though?
No, it was
Come
not.
On. All right. I'll say it wasn't that bad.
But I just want to make like a quick comment about I did think that S.H.I.E.L.D. looked less like S.H.I.E.L.D. in this and more like the police station downtown. I mean, we've seen S.H.I.E.L.D. in the past.
But Adam, the 90s.
Like, yeah,
remember
but,
pagers?
I know. It just felt like, honestly, they could have just been cops. Like, there wasn't really anything S.H.I.E.L.D. about them as far as Fury went.
It did. That led me down like a really long hole because we also see the Tesseract in the movie and we are like, wait, it took me a long time to figure out the Tesseract's path. And then also with that is S.H.I.E.L.D.'s path. So I'm gonna go a little bit deeper here because
Path of the Tesseract.
I found all this out. Okay, so they are in this place called Pegasus, right? Well, we've seen Pegasus before because in Avengers, that was the facility that Fury was going to in the helicopter where the Tesseract was being tested.
Tesseract.
So the Project Pegasus came up. Shut your face. I'm going to shut your mic off. You shut your face.
Me? I was laughing because of Courtney's reaction.
But you're whispering Pegasus. Shush.
I wasn't. I was actually whispering the Tesseract. Because that's how the alien guy on the little mini planet that they keep bringing Loki on with the weird face, he says Tesseract Avengers. It sticks out to me. I don't know.
So you have S.H.I.E.L.D., which we know was formed by Howard Stark in like the 40s, 50s, whatever that was. And that Pegasus is a combination of NASA and shield, because Pegasus actually stands for, which is really, it's so terrible. It is, hold on, I can't read.
It's an acronym?
It's an acronym.
Good.
It is, where did I put it? Potential Energy / Group / Alternate Sources / United States. Yeah.
That is some Marvel-sized that bullshit is, right yes. there. I love it. I love it.
So we have Howard Stark, who obviously had the Tesseract. He found it in the ocean, so he has the Tesseract. He, I'm assuming, makes Pegasus because it's this whole, like, group that is going to talk about potential energy from other sources, hence the Tesseract. So then we get to Captain America, First Avenger, where the Red Skull finds the Tesseract in the life tree carving or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Which then...
Not
so
well
that's,
defended.
So that's how it's found on Earth. Then Howard Stark gets it. It stays with Pegasus until Lawson decides to use it for this thing, but then gets back into S.H.I.E.L.D. because Goose.
Flurkins.
Yeah.
Goose.
Which was... the best. So it's, and it's, it was so random, but I was like, because remember we were like, well, how did the Red Skull get it anyway? It was just, it
I
was,
forgot how the Red Skull, I forgot First Avenger is basically what happened when we had that conversation.
It was lost on Earth because the Vikings were worshiping the gods. Odin slipped up, let his treasure fall into Earth, and then he finds it.
Is that a real?
That is exactly, if you go on the Wikia, that's exactly how the Tesseract, and I'm sure.
Don't say that's what happened.
No, no,
say
I think it's
on the Wiki.
No, because it's from the movies.
Those
they
two
take
statements.
It, no, 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 it, they take it from the movies. I think that's exactly how they explain it.
Yeah, no, like Odin, so the Tesseract ended up on Earth because Odin didn't want the Infinity Stones. He knew there were stones together in the same place. He couldn't keep it in the treasury.
Okay, so he didn't drop it out of his pocket.
He kept it purposely on Earth. They were the guardians were tasked with keeping it safe, which is in that world tree carving. Red Skull gets it. It gets lost. Howard Stark finds it in the ocean. He has it at that time. At some point between there and Captain Marvel, Pegasus gets a hold of it. And then I guess S.H.I.E.L.D. reacquires it through.
Yeah.
Here, so.
And if you can say that S.H.I.E.L.D. and NASA was what made up Pegasus, like that's exactly how Lawson gets it at Pegasus, because S.H.I.E.L.D. probably put it there because it's all about different energy sources, and that's clearly an energy source.
That's the thing. It didn't look like S.H.I.E.L.D. was working with Pegasus at the time of Captain Marvel, because they're like, oh, we don't know who you are. Come in here. We're going to scan your IDs and
stuff.
Yeah,
no, I never took it at all that they were working.
But we've seen Pegasus and S.H.I.E.L.D. work together.
Right.
Also, in one of Tony's things, it was Project Pegasus. And it could be like how like the FBI and the CIA don't always like mix, you know?
Yeah,
like they're different entities.
That's a good way of looking at
so,
it.
So
yeah.
I agree, Adam. They didn't look like they were like BFFs. Like, but it was also like they were asking about a dead person. So they could have been like, yo, what are these people
doing?
Did
he go in there and he's like, a dead man came in here today with a cat. Very dear to me. Oh my God, that literally works. Jesus, all of that actually makes sense.
Yes.
I want Edgar suit showing up and trying to find the Tesseract.
Well,
and that
we
cat.
Have Vincent D'Onofrio in the Marvel Universe.
Man came here today. Dead
Only
man.
If I can be the your okay. skin is hanging off your bones.
David Cross is
that
awesome.
Good.
Oh no, that was the
woman.
The wife.
That's the wife, that yeah.
Voice. Sugar and water.
Go back and watch that tonight, no.
Yeah, really. Okay, any final thoughts on Captain Marvel / MCU / Endgame, however we want to talk about any of this?
My last statement. Let them write the next one, but I would love to see a director who has a little more of a unique vision visually, like legitimately, and who can punch up the moments of emotion to show on the screen the way that it should when you read it. I think that there's a disconnect there in this film. And that's my biggest thing. But I actually think it's really, really good.
Yeah.
But it feels like a phase one movie, and we're not there anymore. And I get it. It's a you know, it's the first female thing that they did and all that. So like it shouldn't be expected that like, oh well, you have to be better than everything else that ever came out. But I don't care who it stars. Marvel, you've done this. Let us move forward. And with that, an entire new slew of heroes are going to be introduced.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just shut up because it's going to happen anyway.
So excited. Ryan?
this movie's really dense in like the MCU lore, so you know, make sure you're little caught, at least mostly caught up to where we are in terms of all the films. But overall, it's, you know, it's a fun movie. There's a lot to like in it. We barely touched on Goose. Goose steals just about every scene that he's in. It's definitely worth going and seeing in the theaters.
100%. Ashley?
Comparatively to like Wonder Woman, I needed more of the punch. I needed to pack more of a punch. I thought Wonder Woman had just the better heart to it. So I guess it was a little bit of a letdown, but yeah, definitely still go see it. It's fun. It's good. But yeah.
I would say go see it. You know, any movie where people in unison scream your ass, like I'm on board for that. So there was definitely some good, there were some good comedic moments. Excuse me. I'm dying apparently. I enjoyed it. I do think it was a little bit of a letdown for me too, but I am going to go see it again. I just got my AMC stubs yesterday. So nice. I'm going to go see it again. I think that's going to be the key for me. I think I'll enjoy it more on a second viewing now that I have a better understanding of what's happening based on our conversation today. Thank you, everyone. I still say go see it. If you're an MCU fan at all, go see it for sure.
Cool. Adam?
I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I will be going to see it again in 3D this time to see how that shapes up.
My God, man.
I know. I'm a glutton here. I have to like justify my import price here for the movie. But right. No, I enjoyed it overall. I think it, as Pete and everybody said, it needed better direction. I hope we get that. You know, I hope we get that same evolution that we got from Cap First Avenger to Winter Soldier, because that is a night and day difference as far as a quality film goes. I want to see that for the second Captain Marvel. Hey, Russo's, come on, you know, direct it. Let's go.
No. Find other people. They've been doing the same thing with the Infinity War movies. Don't even tell me those look different. I'm sorry. I love you, Adam.
No. I'm talking Cap, you know, the Russo's from Joe Johnston from Cap First Avenger. You know,
so find the other Russo's or.
Yeah, that's whatever. What I'm saying. Find that comparison.
Like, find the next.
How about that?
Equal,
yes.
You know, how about that? Because I definitely think it could use a punch in that direction. But.
I would take that.
I want Ava behind the camera for a Marvel film. And
that would be amazing.
Well, maybe not Captain Marvel, but anyways.
She could do all of them. I don't care. Yes, I agree. Weird. Definitely 100% see it. I think while there's maybe some directorial stuff, I think, like we said, the script, there was, the actors really hit things that probably if anybody else did it, it would have just fell flat. But I think that they really carried the movie. And I think that's what made me so excited. You know, not just Samuel L. Jackson and Ben Mendelsohn, but I absolutely loved Brie Larson. I loved the people around her. I loved, you know, everything that she did. And I like that they didn't let this fall into a lot of tropes. If anything, they called out a couple of female tropes. They called out things that, you know, women are always told, like, don't get emotional and things like that. And they made some statements. And I think that that's really good because, you know, while there were some slip-ups, if anything, we can say, like, they are pushing and they are, you know, calling out some stuff that needs to get called out, you know, how people speak of refugees and, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, call it out. Show that it's not right. You know, show that if you embrace your emotions, they don't necessarily have to be a bad thing. Like, embrace who you are. Like, all this stuff is really great. And I'm happy that just like Wonder Woman, they didn't, you know, have to rely on, you know, a love interest and all this stuff to make our heroine be like the best that she could be or anything like that.
Oh, yeah,
so.
No, the movie doesn't need anything like that.
Yeah,
actually.
So, like, thankfully. So
if anyone took that out of, like, anyone's comments, I think you can throw that away.
No, yeah. But I'm just happy
absolutely
that
not
it didn't do any of that. So.
Just to give her by name, Akira Akbar, who plays the young Monica.
Yeah.
She is really, really good.
Yes.
Two of the best performances in the movie.
Yeah,
it's tough to get good performances out of kids. And Akira and McKenna Grace, who I think she could act well into a cardboard box at this point, which is frustrating to see that level of talent on someone so young.
Yeah.
They're phenomenal.
Yeah. And I'm interested to see, like Adam said, how they're going to deal with Monica going, you know, this 25-year jump, her connection with Captain Marvel on
Earth
now.
She's Janelle Monáe, and I jump out of the window out of happiness because that would absolutely send me into a stupor.
Okay, that sounds good. Thankfully, we live on a second floor now. I don't know. But anyway, that's going to be our Captain Marvel review. I hope you kept with us the whole time. If you've seen the movie, if not, go see it. Go see it again like Courtney's going to do. I'm sure all of us will probably do it again. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be something that we'll sit on.
It's not a one shot. Heyo, comics.
Boo. Yeah, seriously. Okay, so let's do this. Let's wrap it up. Thank you guys for listening to Disney Magic Hour. Let's give a shout out to our guests, all the things that they do. Ashley, give me once again where everybody can find your podcast.
We can be found on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. You just have to look up the Barca Lounger, and then we have the Barca Lounger podcast. It's at Instagram. You can find us on our Facebook page, same name. Easy, but don't Facebook. We don't really like so Instagram mainly. Just go at the Barca Lounger podcast on Instagram.
And you guys talk movies, TV.
We actually do TV shows. Mainly. TV shows. Okay. We try to stay up on the latest TV.
And what was the last one you did?
We just talked about Russian Doll.
Ooh.
Oh my God, yes. So good!
I gotta watch that. Actually,
Natasha Lyonne is New York.
Yes.
Oh, she's brilliant.
So much.
It was perfect.
So entertaining.
I can't wait to listen. Awesome, Adam, movie guy. You're the movie guy. 365, where people see you.
You can find me at YouTube. I do a daily show, all things movies, Blu-ray and 4K. And you can also find me over at Twitter and Instagram at MovieGuy365.
Awesome. What?
Guys, everyone just has to realize we're not going to be on Facebook forever.
Yeah, no, Facebook is dying. So
I know a lot of our community, like our specific community, we talk via Facebook. It's not going to be there.
Yeah, we're gonna have to.
We are not going to be there. We are not going to be supporting that format in the near future.
We'll have to create a huge Discord group.
We'll have to figure something out. We will try to figure something out because I know not everyone should be on everything. But please know that Disney Magic Hour and Facebook are not going to be having a relationship for very much longer. Yeah, we can't,
especially with the way Facebook is going.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But we'll figure that out when that comes. Ryan, where's everybody finding Main Street?
So you can find it on Facebook. No, I'm just kidding. it is on Facebook, but you can find us at mainstgazette.com is where the Main Street Gazette mostly lives. Our Instagram and Twitter is also mainstgazette. So real simple, real clean.
Good. Ours is not simply clean. We are lastgenpodcast.com. We're on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod.
Gotta fix all this stuff.
We are on Instagram at DisneyMagicHourPodcast. We're on Facebook. Our group is there for now. Join it. We'll update it into where we're going to be after that. But I post daily on Instagram. Every once in a while, I'll interact on Twitter. Who knows what we'll be doing. But whatever. You'll find us. We'll be here. Find us. iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Spotify. Listen. Review us, please. There was no new reviews this week, so I cannot read anything. But still waiting for you guys to leave reviews. You can definitely add Goose into your review. I will love it. Somehow incorporate Goose into your review. 5 stars. I'll read it on our next show. So until then, we'll all see you on the interwebs. Have a wonderful weekend, whenever you're listening to this. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.